Pleasant man he was not. He continued to speak across his own shoulder with a weary politeness which seemed every minute about to pass into an incomprehensible irritation. This inclination to ill-temper seemed to contradict his ready offer to help a complete stranger. Indeed, it took away half the effect, since he appeared to be helpful against his own will. Perhaps he only wanted a lift to Dothan, for he mounted the ass as they set out, and Joseph walked alongside, chafing under the man's ill will over the name of Israel. He said, "It is his title of honor, which he got at Jabbok Ford after his victory." "I find it absurd," the other retorted, "that thou talkest of victory, where there can be no talk of anything of the sort. A proper victory, from which one cometh off halting all the rest of one's life, carrying off indeed a name, but not that of him with whom he wrestled. Moreover," he said suddenly, making his eyeballs roll round in a circle in the most extraordinary way, "pay no heed to me, but call thy father Israel, if it please thee. It hath its justification, and my opposition was mere caprice. Likewise I note that I am sitting upon thy ass," he added, making his eyeballs perform the circuit once again. "If thou preferest, I will get off so that thou canst mount." A singular man. He appeared to regret his former unfriendliness, yet even the repentance seemed no deeper or more spontaneous than his readiness to help. Joseph, on the other hand, was friendly by nature, and held with the principle that one best meets strangeness with increase of friendliness. He answered, "Since thou guidest me and openest out of kindness the way to my brethren, thou hast a right to my animal. Sit still, I pray thee, and we shall change anon. Thou hast walked the whole day, whereas I could ride." "Many thanks," said the youth. "Thy words are indeed no more than becoming, but still I thank thee kindly. I have been temporarily robbed of certain facilities for travel," he added, and shrugged his shoulders. "Do missions and messages make thee pleasure?" he next inquired. "I rejoiced when the father called me," answered Joseph. "Who then sendeth thee?" "Thou mayest understand that many messengers go to and fro between the great lords east and south through this land," responded the other. "Who actually sendeth thee, that thou dost not know at all. The commission goes through many mouths, and it helps thee little to follow it to its source. In any case, thou must take to the road. At present I have a letter to deliver in Dothan," said he, "which I carry in my girdle. But I can see in the future that I must also play the guard." "The guard?" "Yes. I am liable, for instance, to be commanded to watch over a well, or some shrine or other, of which there is a question. Messenger, guide, guard, all these I must play as they come, according to the taskmaster's will. Whether it give one pleasure, and whether one actually feel made for the task, is another matter, which I put aside. Likewise will I not inquire whether one has understanding for the ideas which give rise to these missions. No, I prefer to leave such questions open, only saying, as between ourselves, that there is much incomprehensible urgency about the matter. Dost thou love mankind?" He put the question abruptly, yet it did not come to Joseph as a surprise, since the stranger's whole bearing displayed an arrogant displeasure with the human species, and the disinclination to go about his business among men. Joseph answered, "We usually smile at each other, mankind and I." "Yes, because thou art known to be beautiful and well favored," said his guide. "Wherefore they smile at thee, and thou smilest back, in order to strengthen them in their folly. Thou wouldst do better to show them a gloomy mien, and say, 'What would you with your smiling? These hairs will fall out, alas, and these now white teeth as well. These eyes are only a jelly of blood and water. They will dissolve away, and this whole hollow charm of the flesh will shrivel and shamefully decay. It would be decent for thee to sober them by the remembrance of what they know already, though they let themselves be beguiled by the servile smile of the present moment. Such creatures as thou are naught but a fleeting and dissembling gloss upon the horror of all flesh beneath the surface. I do not say that even this skin and husk is the most appetizing in the world, with its steaming pores and sweat glands, but scratch it ever so little, and the salt scarlet brew comes out, Well, the deeper one goes, the worse it gets. It is sheer guts and stink. The beautiful and well-favored should be beautiful and well-favored through and through, solid and fine-grained, and not filled up with dirt and jelly.
Then, said Joseph, you must stick to graven and carven images. For instance, to the beautiful god which the women hide in the shrubbery and seek, lamenting that they may bury him in the pit. He is beautiful through and through, of solid olive wood, not gory and steaming. But they wish him to look as though he were not solid, but bleeding from the tusk of the boar. They paint upon him red wounds, and deceive themselves, so that they may weep over his dear life lost. So it is. Either life is deception, or beauty. Thou canst not find both, united in truth.
Fie, said the guide, puckering his round chin, and looking down over his shoulder with half-closed eyes at his companion. No, he added after a pause, say what thou wilt. It is an ugly breed, that drinketh unrighteousness like water, and has long since merited another flood, this time without an ark.
Thou art most likely just in the matter of the unrighteousness, Joseph responded. But consider that everything cometh in pairs in the world, part and counterpart, to the end that one may distinguish between them. And if the one were not next the other, then they both were not. Without life were no death, without riches no poverty. And if we made an end of stupidity, who could speak of cleverness? But thus it is with purity and impurity. So much is clear. The unclean beast speaketh to the clean one, give thanks to me, for if I were not, then how shouldst thou know that thou art pure, and who would call thee so? And the evil man to the just, fall at my feet, for without me, where were thine advantage?
Thou hast said it, answered the stranger, for it is just that which I mistrust from my soul, this dual world. I do not understand the necessity for a breed whose purity can be spoken of only comparatively, and in retrospect. Yet one hath always to be mindful of him. There are always plans regarding him, goodness knows how far-reaching, and this and that to be brought about respecting his puny little future. Just as now, for instance, I must see that thou comest to thy right goal, thou bag of wind. It maketh me to weep with boredom.
The vexatious creature! Why, then, does he show me the way, if it is such a burden to him? Joseph thought. It is stupid to play the agreeable, and then to sulk. It is clear he has only been thinking of the ride. He might get off, too. We were going to take turns. He talks just like a man, he thought, and smiled to himself over the way people have of criticizing their own kind and accepting themselves, so that the man sits in judgment over mankind as though he were not one of them. Then he said, Yea, thou talkest of humanity and sittest in judgment, saying of what bad stuff it is composed. But there was a time when even to the children of God themselves man seemed not so evil, since they went in unto his daughters, and giants and mighty men were conceived. The guide turned his head in his affected way toward the shoulder farther from Joseph. Thou knowest all the little stories, I see, he answered with a titter. For thy years, thou'rt informed in events, that I must say. For my part, be it said, I consider the tale to be idle gossip. But if it be true, then let me tell thee why it was that the children of light so behaved to the daughters of Cain. They did so from excess of contempt. Yes, verily. Knowest thou why destruction came upon the daughters of Cain? They went with uncovered shame and mated like cattle. Their whoredom so mocked all bounds that man, as it were, could not look at it without being tempted. I know not if thou understandest that. They went to all extremes. They threw their garments on the ground and went forth without them. If they had not known shame, it might have answered, and the sight of them would not have got into the bones of the children of light. But they well knew shame. They were, on religious grounds, very chaste indeed, and their lust consisted precisely therein, that they would tread shame underfoot. Can such a thing be borne? The man had intercourse with the mother and daughter and brother's wife openly and on the streets, and they had altogether one thought in mind, the frightful enjoyment of wounded shame. Must that not seize upon the members of the Children of Light? They were tempted by their scorn. Canst thou not understand that? The last shred of respect was gone from them for this breed, who were set under their noses as though there were not enough already in the world, and whom they should have respected on grounds of higher necessity. They found that man simply existed for unchastity, and their contempt took the form of lasciviousness. If thou canst not understand all that, thou art but a calf. I can understand it if I try, replied Joseph. But how dost thou come to know it? Ask thy old Eliezer, too, whence cometh what he teacheth thee. I know as much of the events, too, perhaps even more, moving to and fro in the world as I do, as messenger, guide, and guard. I come to hear the most various things. I can assure thee that the flood only came at last because it appeared that the contempt of the Children of Light for mankind had taken the form of desire. That turned the scale. Otherwise it would perhaps never have happened. I need only add that the Children of Light were of fixed purpose to bring on the flood. But unfortunately there was the ark, and man came in again by the back door. Let us be glad of that, said Joseph. Otherwise we should not be here chatting on the way to Dothan, and taking turns to ride according to our agreement. Thou art right, replied the other, and again rolled his eyes round. I forget everything, chattering. Of course I must lead thee and guard thee that thou comest to thy brethren. But who is more important, the watcher or the watched? Not without some bitterness must I answer, the watched is more important, for him is the watcher there, and not the other way about. Therefore I will now dismount, and thou shalt ride, and I walk beside thee in the dust. I can stand that too, said Joseph, as he mounted. It is, after all, pure chance that thou canst ride even a part of the time, and not go all the way in the dust. So they went on under the stars by the pale moonlight, northwards from Shechem toward Dothan, through broad and narrow valleys, over steep hills clothed in forests of cedar and acacia, past sleeping villages. Joseph, too, slept by the hour as he sat on the ass, and the guide walked in the dust. But awaking out of such slumber, it was already dawn, he missed a little basket of pressed fruit, and another of roast onions from the ass's load, and noted reluctantly that the folds of his guide's girdle were correspondingly fuller. The man stole. It was a painful discovery, and showed how little ground he had had to accept himself when he criticized the race of mankind. Joseph said never a word. Indeed, he himself in their conversation had defended the evil for the sake of its opposite. Moreover, the man was a guide, and thus dedicate to Nabu, the lord of the westernmost point in the cycle, leading down into the underworldly half of the world, a servant, that is, of the god of thieves. One might assume that he had performed a pious and symbolic act when he stole from his sleeping charge. For all these reasons, Joseph said naught of his discovery, but reverenced the dishonesty of the man in the guise of religious duty. Yet it was painful to learn that the guide had stolen out and out. The fact might be a fresh explanation of his willingness to play the guide. In any case, it impressed Joseph unfavorably and cast him down. But something much worse than the theft happened soon enough. The sun had come up behind field and wood, and Dothan's green hill was already in sight. It lay diagonally on their right in the morning sunshine, with the village on its top. Joseph, sitting on the ass while the thief held the bridle, was looking thither. There was a jerk and a fall, and it had happened. Huldah had gone into a hole with her forefoot, had fallen, and could not get up again. She had broken her pastern. They both examined it. Broken, said the guide shortly. What a fix! Have I not said to thee the pasterns were weak? Thou shouldst not rejoice even if thou art right. The word should not come in thy mouth. Thou wast leading her, and wast not careful, so that she stepped into the hole. I was not careful, and thou complainest of me. But so it is with human beings. They must have someone to blame when things go wrong, even though it was prophesied beforehand. It is also the way of mankind to have willfully foreseen misfortune and to make a petty triumph of it. Be glad that I complain of thee only for heedlessness. I might have accused thee of other things as well. If thou hadst not advised me to ride by night, then we should not have overtired Hulda, and a wise beast like her would never have stumbled. Dost thou think the pastern will be made good again by thy lamentings?
No, Joseph said, that I do not. But that brings me back to the question, what shall I do? I cannot, after all, leave my beast lying here with all the load of provisions which I was to present to the brethren in Jacob's name. There remaineth much, though I have eaten some, and more has been got rid of in other ways. Shall Hulda die helpless here, and the beasts of the fields eat my goods? I am near to weep from vexation.
And who knows again what to do but I, responded the stranger. Did I not say that I can play the watchman when need is? Go then, for I will sit here and watch thy beast, and the provisions, and frighten off birds and other thieves. Whether I am born for such a task is another matter, which we need not talk of here. Enough, I will sit and guard thy ass until thou hast gone to the brethren, and come back with them or a couple of servants, to fetch the goods and look after the beast to see if it is be cured or killed.
Thanks, said Joseph. So let us do. I can see thou art just like a man. Thou hast thy good sides, and of the others we will not speak. I will make all haste, and return again with help.
I will await thee. Thou canst not go wrong. Round the hill, and then back into the valley behind it, 500 paces through scrub and clover. There wilt thou find thy brethren, near a well where there is no water. If thou needest aught from thy ass, bethink thee now. Not a headcloth to shield thee from the sun?
Thou art right, cried Joseph. The mischance hath robbed me of my head. That will I not leave here, said he,
and drew the ketonet out of the beringed leather bag.
Nor in thy care either, whatever good side thou showest, for I will take it with me afoot into the Vale of Dothan, that I may arrive in splendor, even if not on white Hulda, as Jacob would have wished. I will put it on at once, and before thine eyes, so, and so, and thus. How dost thou like it? Am I not a gay shepherd bird in my coat of many colors? Mommy's veil, how doth it become her son?